LA has the largest jail system in the country.
You got people that have been in jail just like one time in their life, can't get nothing because of whatever mistake they made.
I stole some ground turkey because I wanted to feed my family. We was hungry.
Off the Block, stories tracing the path from city block to cell block and back. Available September 13th at kcrw.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
From KCRW, this is Here Be Monsters.
In high school, at your heaviest, do you remember what your body felt like, what it felt like to inhabit your body?
I've been thinking about this, and I just remember always feeling like I took up too much space and always feeling like I wanted to make myself as small as possible. And like, my body just felt kind of cumbersome. Like, my legs always touched each other, and I always felt like I had to be checking myself somehow. It's weird because it's something that you almost, you just want to be invisible. And so it's like you think you can hide it from people. And so then when someone actually says it to you, it's like, holy shit, like they know my secret. I know they're right, but I feel so bad about it. Like, how can I let them know that I feel so bad for being fat? And it's just something you're trying to hide. When I was 13, I started Weight Watchers for the first time. And I thought, like, oh, this is totally sustainable. I just have to go to meetings forever. And I stopped going to meetings and gained all the weight back. And then I felt like a failure until I tried the next thing, which was Curves, the, like, middle-aged women's gym. And so I tried that when I was, like, 14. And just really developed the sense of, as a fat person, I have to lose weight. That's like my life's work. And I'm failing at all efforts to lose weight. And so I'm failing at the thing that I'm supposed to do on this earth. Like, it's the most important thing.
Here Be Monsters, the podcast about
half of a cookie,
the podcast about
the unknown.
No.
I've always felt really lucky to know Erin. I first met her in high school as she was recovering from a life-threatening bout of encephalitis. Her older brother was one of my friends in French class. One day over winter break, he texted me and asked me to pray for his little sister. At first, she just had terrible headaches and a fever. But when her fever didn't break, Erin went to the hospital, an infection in her brain. Erin was out of school for a while. Eventually, she came back part-time. I remember noticing her in the hallways. It felt like spotting some sort of rare bird. There she is. Erin is shy and always has been. Not in a timid way, more like in a Daria Morgendorfer way. She was too smart to buy into all the crap that we're told about how teenagers are supposed to be. And to me, it seemed like she was over high school the moment she got there. Being friends with Erin felt like a privilege, like she had chosen me. With Erin, I could forget my obsession with trying to be popular. Once I was in her inner circle, I felt safe. Feeling safe around Erin meant that we could eat in front of each other. We were both about the same size, I'd guess 240-ish pounds. Fat girls shouldn't be seen eating too much in public, but in the safety of each other, Erin and I ate entire bags of pizza rolls. We would bake cookies on a whim, and once we even tried to fry our own potato chips. We were both fat since childhood, and we had each gone to Weight Watchers meetings in middle school. Neither of us had ever had boyfriends, and both knew what it felt like to be overlooked. Together, we watched cooking shows and reality TV, or sang loudly to the Dixie Chicks, or did puzzles. When I was a freshman in college, Erin was a senior in high school. That year, my family moved away from Kalispell, Without my parents living there, visiting Kalispell meant couch surfing, and it became harder to feel at home there. So that summer, I didn't go home, and I didn't see Aaron. One summer away from Kalispell turned into three, turned into six, and I've only visited my hometown a handful of times since then. Aaron and I tried to stay close, but soon I became a pretentious college freshman, expert on life itself. I would scold Aaron for giving into the patriarchy by shaving her armpits. I gave her unsolicited dating advice. I was eager to forget the dorky Mormon theater kid virgin I'd been in high school and pretend that I'd always been the kind of girl with a blue pixie haircut and combat boots. Meanwhile, Aaron got into her dream school and moved to Indiana. She spent weekends in Chicago and traveled to Italy and Senegal. To be totally honest, I didn't know too much about her life after that because I never asked. Our text messages became more infrequent and less intimate. I mostly blame myself for this. I tend to let people go when they're not in my immediate vicinity. Even precious people like Aaron. A couple of years ago, I started noticing changes on Aaron's Facebook. She looked different. Really, really different. Who is this new person? I started to resent her for changing. I even hid her profile so I didn't have to look at her. On one of my rare trips to Kalispell, I finally saw her in person and could hardly believe that this was Aaron standing in front of me. I didn't know what was going on. Eventually, my mom told me the truth. She told me that, for the second time since knowing her, Aaron had nearly died. I wanted to ask her about it, to understand what had happened in the years since the Dixie Chicks and pizza rolls. So recently, I drove down to where she lives now, in Portland, Oregon. We sat on her porch, and I asked her about it.
So, my college had a graduation requirement of studying abroad, and I chose to go to Senegal, and I'd never done anything like that before. And so, summer before my senior year of college, I went to Senegal, and it was the most wonderful, transformative experience. Appearance didn't matter as much. I didn't have a mirror, so that was part of it. My host family loved me to death and didn't care about my appearance, and you also were just so hot that you like wore whatever you could to be comfortable, and so it really didn't matter. And toward the end of my 3 months there, I was at a relative's house of one of my host parents, and I stepped on a scale. And scales are like not super common there at all, but she had a scale in her bathroom, and it was the first time I had seen a scale since I'd been there. And I saw that I had lost, I think, like 30 pounds. At least it doesn't matter. Something switched in me then. Basically, the whole time I'd been in Senegal, I hadn't really thought about my weight. And then when I saw how much I weighed, it was suddenly really important. I just felt this. It was like I had a taste of losing weight, and I felt like I had to hold on to it. It was really important for me to just keep it up. So then I went back to college, and then I was really interested in a guy, and I thought, okay, if I keep up this weight loss, like, he might be into me. I hadn't ever really seriously dated anybody, and I had always had in my mind that that was probably because of my size. And so it just felt obvious to me that no one would be interested in me unless I lost weight. I wanted to do it quickly because I was graduating that spring. And so I thought, like, okay, I want him to see that I'm, like, making progress in this area. Finally, I got the courage to see if he would be interested in going out sometime. And I was so nervous and, like, so self-conscious. And I was not totally rejected, but not met with, like, the same enthusiasm. And I was devastated. And I thought, for sure, it had to be because of my size. It had to be because I hadn't lost enough weight yet. And that was right before Christmas break. So I went home and I exercised the entire time that I was home. And I didn't take a single day off. I ran on Christmas morning in the snow and went to the gym. It was like all I did with my Christmas break. And people at home who I'd grown up around would see me out and about and tell me how great I looked, tell me how much weight I'd lost, and I looked awesome. So that felt really good. Felt like I was on the right track. And when I went back to school, exercising pretty much became my only extracurricular activity. I would go to school, I would exercise, and that was pretty much it. I started buying a lot of diety things, diet bread, diet yogurt, diet everything, and kind of shifted from like occasionally treating myself to a latte to only having a sugar-free latte to only having like Americanos with Splenda. It just kind of cut back so insidiously. And I think I had it in my mind that only people who were already thin got anorexia, or only people who were obsessed with being models or like obsessed with fitness. And I was like, well, I'm not any of those. I'm just losing weight like I'm supposed to do, like everyone has told me I'm supposed to do.
Can you point to like a moment where you think that it changed from what is quote unquote like normal dieting to a disorder?
If I look back through my calorie logs, which I still have, I know that there is a day that felt where I can see a shift. I went with my dad to visit my brother in New York. And so I brought weights with me on this day trip. And I was worried about not being able to do my exercises. And I was really worried about not being near a scale and not being able to weigh myself. And in my mind, fortunately, the people I was staying with had a scale. So I was like, oh, thank God, I know my weight that day. When I had to know my weight every single day, and when I had to be, felt like I had to be in a calorie deficit every single day, at that point, it was like there was no going back. When you're really thin, people like to make sure that you know that you're really thin and like compliment you for it a lot and mention it a lot. And so I got more male attention. People started asking me out. The guy that worked like the AT&T kiosk in Target asked me out. I had never received that kind of attention before.
Did you feel like you knew what to do with that attention?
No. All I knew how to do, the only thing I knew how to do was like shut it down. I had no idea how to respond, you know, and it was kind of ironic because I had lost weight, at least in part because I thought that it would help me meet a guy. And then by the end of it, I didn't want anything to do with any guys. Like, I was just done. And I hated how I looked. I felt like I looked like a skeleton. I hated it. And I felt like a shell. And someone I ran into around that time, as a compliment, said, "You look like a shadow of your former self." And that's exactly how I felt. I felt so hollow. Yeah, people just, it seemed like people focused on the thinness as an inherently attractive quality. Even though I knew my skin looked sunken, my hair looked horrible, I looked awful. Everyone who encountered me, who had known me as a larger person, said, "You look amazing. You look so great."
Did it feel good to hear those things at the time?
When I was very ill and miserable and underweight, it felt horrible because that was when I felt like I knew it didn't matter if I was healthy or not. It didn't matter if I was happy or not. All that mattered to people was that I had lost weight. And it was this feeling of like, oh, thank God, I'm so glad these people can now sleep at night knowing that I'm thin, while I cannot sleep because my body wakes up every 2 hours to scavenge for food or because I wake up and have panic attacks. I was more miserable than I'd been in my life, and everyone else just felt kind of relieved, and that made me feel horrible because it felt like it confirmed what I had suspected.
Which was?
That losing weight is the most important thing I could do with my life. So, after I graduated college, I remember crying on the phone to my mom and saying, I just think I need to move home. I need to get help. I'm so scared. I was so scared. And my mom was telling me, well, come home. But I had agreed to work at this summer camp after I graduated college. And so I did. And I knew it was a bad idea. And if there were anything I could do differently, it would be not going to camp. That was a horrible, horrible decision. Camp was just 5 weeks of weighing myself, buying smaller pants, and feeling anxious. Every single morning, I had a scale with me in my bag, and I was so ashamed. I didn't want any of my campers to see me. And I would pull out my scale and go down to the bathhouse and weigh myself. And it was this simultaneous sigh of relief when I saw that I had lost more weight and immense, immense fear. Because the part of my brain that was conditioned to feel like weight loss was good felt very happy to lose weight. But I was absolutely terrified. So after camp, I was going to drive home to Montana, and I had this idea in my head that as soon as I got home, everything would be okay, and I could just be fine. And so I was going to drive from Colorado to Montana all by myself in my car, and they were putting alerts out, don't go outside, there's going to be dangerous hail, and I was so determined to get home. I felt like I couldn't live another day not at home. I packed this pathetic little lunch, and I was so anxious, and I had to like spread my food out throughout the day. And I started driving and just like booked it home. And then I was in a hailstorm in eastern Montana. And so I kept driving, and I just thought, like, I don't care about the hail. I just have to get home. The hailstorm got so intense, I pulled over to the side of the road. It broke in my rear driver's side window, and I was so scared, and I covered myself up with a blanket and cried. I called AAA, and they came and got me, and I ended up getting a hotel room. And I remember I was so scared and so hungry, and I got like a dry salad. And then I let myself eat half of a cookie, and I threw the rest away. And I think that is like a pretty clear picture of the beginning of my rock bottom.
I remember that storm. I remember hearing about it. That was a really hard visit for me. I mean, obviously, it was nothing compared to what was going on with you, but that was the first time I saw you in person mm-hmm. after all of it. And I remember I was so nervous to see you because I'd only seen pictures. And frankly, there's a part of me that was really jealous. That was like, which is fucked up. It's so fucked up.
It is fucked up. It's so fucked up.
I was jealous, and I was ashamed at being jealous. Because I was like, I should just be happy for her. She's my friend. Like, she did this thing that, like, I could never do. And I was at your house, and I was so nervous for you to come home. And you pulled up in your car and got out, and I was just, I couldn't believe it. And it was so sad for me because it felt like, oh, there's this new person now. And there's this real part of me that was like, I'm never going to see Aaron again. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
And, you know, on top of all these, like, really fucked up, complicated feelings of, like, jealousy and envy. And I remember hugging you, and I said, you look amazing. But I can even remember, like, your eyes were kind of sunken in, and you were like, pale.
Mm-hmm. When I came home after camp, and I drove through the hail and shit, I was like, I'm just gonna, like, nip this in the bud. Nobody even needs to know. I'm gonna be on the fast track to normal. And, like, I just thought it was gonna be, like, no big deal. And so I kind of kept it under wraps. And I didn't know what was happening.
When you were at your thinnest, like, what did your body feel like?
Like a shell. It felt hollow. I was in pain all the time. All my hair was falling out. I was constipated. Sitting down is painful because your bones touch everything. Sleeping's painful because your knees touch. My lips were blue if I was outside for like 10 minutes. And when I came back inside, I couldn't use my hands for like at least half an hour till they kind of warmed up. I mean, I felt like I was dying. I mean, I just felt like my body was completely hollow. And I hated how I looked. I felt like I looked like a skeleton. I hated it. When I would see fat people at my sickest, I would just feel very jealous of them. Like, oh my God, they can eat whipped cream. I can't eat whipped cream. Like, that's amazing. I'm so envious of them. I really did miss that. And I also missed just being myself. Suddenly, when I had this different identity, I couldn't be that person anymore. And like when you talked about feeling like I was gone, like you wouldn't see me again, that was really how it felt. It felt like I had to be this entirely new person.
You keep it in your wallet?
Yeah, actually I just saw it in there today and I was like, oh, this is still in here? Like, maybe I should throw it out. And then I was like, no, that's okay. I'll keep it. So, how fortunate. Okay. My post said, friends, family, and anyone in between. I've been thinking for some time about writing a sort of coming out post about the last 2 years of my life, which have been the hardest and most tumultuous thus far. As many of you know, I spent much of my adolescence and early adulthood at a very high body weight. In the fall of my senior year of college, I embarked on a diet and exercise regimen that began fairly innocently, through calorie counting and consciously increasing my activity level. Before long, and without me entirely realizing it, I found myself restricting food further and further and increasing exercise to unreasonable levels. I also eventually developed some characteristics that I now know are symptoms of starvation, including increased obsessiveness and intolerance.
I think I know now that being fat was never the problem. The problem was how little I thought of myself, and the problem was what society expected of me. And as long as fatness isn't the problem, there's nothing to be afraid of.
Would eventually become my diagnosis. Those months were the darkest, most painful time in my life, and I did not know if I would ever live a normal life again, or if I wanted to live at all. By the grace of God and through a great deal of hard work, I am still alive and I am working toward a recovered life. This process has been harder than I ever imagined it would be, and it's challenging for me to believe that it has even happened. In some ways, I'm grateful for the process because I know that it has made me stronger and has given me a sense of what my mission in life is. To empower young women and men so they do not buy into our dangerous dieting culture, and to help those in the throes of eating disorders who feel as terribly alone and frightened as they are. For these things, I am grateful, but I would not wish to help
you. Aaron eventually found help from several doctors and therapists in 2014. Her treatment began with a process called refeeding, which is pretty much what it sounds like. It's the process of replenishing a calorie deficit and providing a starving body with much-needed energy to repair internal damage. For weeks, Aaron was required to eat several times a day, which she found terrifying at first. But as Aaron ate more and as her body healed, Her anxiety calmed. She slept better. Her hair stopped falling out. She started to feel like herself again. Today, Erin lives in Portland, Oregon with her cat Lucy and her bicycle Manu. When her anorexia was at its worst, Erin had completely lost her connection to food. Today, she makes her living as a baker and barista. In many ways, Erin is fully recovered, but she's not ignorant to the possibility that she could develop anorexia again. To fight that possibility, she talks openly about her experiences, and she keeps a blog. Her blog is called lovedandworthyoflove.com, all one word. We'll have links to it on our website. Also on our website, we have some facts about human starvation that were discovered in a large-scale study done by researchers at the University of Minnesota, who were studying the psychological and physiological effects of prolonged starvation. Participants experienced increased depression and anxiety, and many became obsessive about food, just like Erin had. We'll have a link to it on our website, hbmpodcast.com. If you're suffering from an eating disorder or are looking for resources for a loved one, you can get help with it right now. Visit eatingdisorderhope.com. Another site that Erin personally recommends is the website performingwomen.com. She personally found that really helpful in her recovery. Again, we'll have links to all of these and more on our website, hbmpodcast.com. This episode was produced by me, Bethany Denton, with help from Jeff Emptman and Nick White. Music for this episode by The Black Spot and Saracel. Here Be Monsters is proud to be part of the independent producer project from KCRW. Thanks so much for listening. We'll have more episodes for you soon.